Tomorrow, January the 19th, marks what would have been the 100th birthday of one of America's greatest authors of psychological thrillers. Patricia Highsmith wrote 22 novels, many other short stories over her five-decade career, many of which have been adapted into hugely successful movies. These include Alfred Hitchcock's 1951 adaptation of Strangers on a Train, the 1999 film adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, and more recently in 2015, the movie Carol with Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. And this was an adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's novel The Price of Salt, which was subsequently reissued as Carolyn. There's a story there, we'll get that later on. Ripley, Andrew Scott, it has emerged, will star in a new television adaptation, a forthcoming Showtime series simply called Ripley, because there's a whole series of Ripley novels. So to look at the extraordinary career and literary output of Patricia Highsmith, I'm joined now by Dr. Claire Clark of the School of English at Trinity College in Dublin. Her background and her family life, her early, her childhood life, very interesting, and the relationship and difficult relationship with mother and stepfather at the very heart of her formation, Claire.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, when we read her novels, they're so dark. And then when we start to look at her biography, we understand why she had this crazy religious Confederate family. Her mother and birth father divorced a few days before she was born. He hadn't wanted her. Her mother had tried to get rid of her and actually joked with her as a child about how she had tried to get rid of her by drinking turpentine and said, "Oh, Pat, it's so funny because you love the smell of turpentine." So this is a very dark family dynamic here, I think, which goes some way to explaining the kind of families that we see in her books then.
Yeah, hardly surprising then that in her first novel she was already... she had people out trying to murder family members. Let's have a listen to a clip, in fact, from the film adaptation, the Alfred Hitchcock film adaptation, and it kind of gives us the basic setup of the story of Strangers on a Train here. Farley Granger is playing Guy Haines, Robert Walker is Bruno Anthony, and they're trying to make a little arrangement with each other that might suit both of them.
Okay. Want to hear one of my ideas for a perfect murder?
I may be old-fashioned, but I thought murder was against the law.
What is a life for two guys? Some people are better off dead. Like your wife and my father, for instance. Oh, that reminds me of a wonderful idea I had once. I used to put myself to sleep at night, figuring it out. Let's say that you'd like to get rid of your wife.
It's a morbid thought.
No. Just suppose. Let's say that you had a very good reason. Let's say. Now, you'd be afraid to kill her. You know why? You'd get caught. And what would trip you up? The motive. Now, here's my idea.
I'm afraid I haven't got time to listen, Bruce.
Listen. It's so simple, too. Two fellows meet accidentally, like you and me. No connection between them at all. Never saw each other before. Each one has somebody that he'd like to get rid of. So... they swap murders.
Swap murders?
Each fellow does the other fellow's murder. Then there's nothing to connect them. Each one has murdered a total stranger. Like, you do my murder, I do yours.
There you go. The setup of Strangers on a Train, as seen in the 1951 Alfred Hitchcock adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's novel Strangers on a Train. Tomorrow would have been Patricia Highsmith's 100th birthday, and we're looking at her work this evening with Dr. Claire Clark. Claire, I mean, it is such a simple setup, and it's ingenious when it's laid out in front of you like that. But and this was her debut novel. How long and how in the family that she grew up in, how did she make her way towards even writing that debut novel?
Well, I mean, it seems like she grew up in quite a cultured family in a lot of ways. Both of her parents, her mother and her adoptive father were illustrators. And she certainly grew up surrounded by books. She went to a good high school in New York. She lived in Manhattan and she ended up going to Barnard College. So it seems like she, you know, she was reading Poe, she was reading Stevenson, Conan Doyle, Bram Stoker, all of these kind of dark authors, you know, were part of her childhood. And then she seems to have started to write when she actually was at high school. And I think it's quite fun. Her first story she wrote when she was 16 is called Crime Begins. And it's a story of a 16-year-old girl who steals a library book from her school library and gets away with it. And she was thinking of a particularly hard-to-get history book from her own school library, which had a waiting list of 150 girls in front of her. So she was kind of always interested in this idea of getting away with things. Ordinary people could.
Yeah, rather innocent, mind you, the library book in comparison to some of the setups that she gives us. Ripley, then, there were a whole series, obviously the probably best known, particularly the film The Talented Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow and Jude Law, huge success in 1999. But there was a whole series of Ripley novels.
Yes, I mean, he stars in a series of novels. She seems to have not been able to get away from him throughout her life. You know, well, sometimes when we think about sequels, we think about somebody banging out books kind of, you know, one after the other. But there were long gaps between this series. So he was obviously a character, I think, that she felt attuned to and drawn back to. And, you know, we know this because she does things like sign some of her letters, Pat, alias Ripley.
Give us a sense of the character of Ripley then, and what you think in his character might transfer directly into Pat, alias Ripley, you know, the parallels with Highsmith herself.
Yeah, I think like Ripley is so similar to her in a lot of ways, because he's embarrassed by the kind of gaucheness of American life, and he's not very wealthy, but he feels like he deserves something better. And that's certainly something that she felt. And she then moved to Europe, as does Ripley, where he feels he can really kind of immerse himself in the cultured world of old Europe and go to galleries and look at beautiful architecture and so on. And how he does this is by killing somebody who has a lot more money but a lot less class than him, and taking over his identity. So he feels like money is the thing that's holding him back from having this life. But I think, you know, he's such an interesting character, because she shows us his psyche through the books. You know, we don't see him just from the outside. We see the ways in which he wants to be loved and he wants to be liked. So the guy that he kills in The Talented Mr. Ripley, Dickie Greenleaf, he desperately wants Dickie to love him and to admire him, possibly as a friend, possibly as more.
Yeah.
When the rejection that he feels when Dickie is not really interested is devastating. And I think these are the types of things that Highsmith herself felt, particularly in relationship to her family.
The Price of Salt is an interesting novel and an interesting story around it, in that that was its original publication name, but it was subsequently published as Carol. And then in 2015, that was the movie that we got. This is the story of a same-sex relationship. How daring was this in 1952? And what did she do that was so different from what might have been there in other same-sex stories that people were reading at the time?
I mean, it's incredibly daring. You know, as she said herself, in the gay literature of the time, there was no happy endings. There was no romantic success as such. So if you had gay men or gay women depicted in literature, in American novels, they had to pay for that in some way or other. So usually what happened was that they died at the end of the novel, either by suicide or by accident, or by kind of confining themselves to a life of heterosexuality and being deeply unhappy. Whereas what she does here is, you know, I've spoken about how she lets her criminal characters get away with things. Well, she lets her lesbian characters get away with things here, and what they get away with is being together and being happy. So it's incredibly groundbreaking for the time, but obviously the fact that she published under a pseudonym shows that she wasn't ready to be associated with that kind of celebration of openly gay love either. I mean, she was somebody who slept with women herself, but wasn't very happy about that, you know, wasn't at peace with that idea.
But she did subsequently publish the novel under the title Carol with her own name on that novel, wasn't
yes.
it? Yeah, yeah.
So she did. So that was 1990.
Yeah,
so
quite a distance
into the future, a very different world, I think, that novel came into. But people still kind of say that that's the novel that outed Highsmith.
Yeah. How difficult, you know, a life did she have in terms of abuse of alcohol and depression?
She wasn't a happy person. I think she was definitely a very tortured person. And, you know, when you read her biographies, you read about her struggling with rage, struggling with depression, drinking every day, kind of starting the day with a bottle of gin, ending the day with a bottle of whiskey. I watched an interview with her this afternoon, actually, on YouTube from the 70s, and she's there smoking Galois the whole time and swilling whiskey, and she doesn't crack a smile the entire time. She's very dry, she's very closed off, and she actually talks about the fact that she never wanted a family, never really wanted love, because she didn't feel she was capable of it. She didn't have good role models in that way, and she just wanted to be by herself, essentially.
Well, she didn't want to be totally by herself. She had her snails.
Well, she did have her snails, that's true.
Explain that.
Well, this is something that comes up in her biographies, which is hilarious, I think, that she's described as an animal lover, but the animals that she loved most were snails. And in fact, what she did, apparently, when she was in the kind of New York literary scene, she carried one of those huge kind of 1950s handbags, which had a head of lettuce and 100 snails inside. And she took this to parties with her and said that, you know, if she got bored, she could hang out with her friends as snails.
and good luck to any handbag snatcher that attempted to take the handbag off her.
Indeed, yeah.
Well, listen, very interesting to hear about her life and her work. That's Dr. Claire Clark there of the School of English at Trinity College in Dublin, speaking to me about the career and legacy of the American thriller writer Patricia Highsmith, born on January the 19th, 1921, so would have been 100 years old tomorrow. And we'll keep our eyes and ears for the details about Showtime, that television series, which is simply called Ripley, going to feature Andrew Scott in the title role. But that is our lot for this evening here on Arena. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields research. Janice Murphy was the broadcast coordinator. Kieran Dunn was on sound this evening. And tonight's programme was produced by Sinead Egan. Talk to you tomorrow night at 7.